Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, Text 33. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tinahato Mahatalo. Vipamano Brahachriya Arshvastam Kampayam Bhagna Sachanyam So Pichafaram. Lord Balaram threw the dead body of Dainakasura into the tallest palm tree in the forest. And when the dead demon landed in the treetop, the tree began shaking. The great palm tree, causing a tree by its side also to shake, broke under the weight of the demon. The neighboring tree caused yet another tree to shake, and this one struck yet another tree, which also began shaking. In this way, many trees in the forest shook and broke. Om Jnana Timaram Hasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakturam Ritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Bhupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Adavanas Tanandante Idam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Bhupa Padam Bhoja Tulisham Janma Janmani. Vairagya Yud Bhakti Risham Payatnai Apayam Mamanabhipsanandham Kitam Bhuhirya Paradhuka Dhuki Sanatanastam Prabhumatsriyami Pancha Kaupa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Vichya Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Sridham Mayapur. As I mentioned before, each dham has a particular flavor or mood. And the mood of Sridham Mayapur is Odharya. Odharya means ultimate magnanimity. Just as a person, Mayapur and Vrindavan are non-different, but they're different aspects or manifestation or moods of the same entity, just like Radha and Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are non-different. they're non-different in the person. It's just like a person. A person can be happy, a person can be sad, a person can be angry, a person can be envious. It's all the same person. But they're presenting themselves differently according to their mood. And even according to that mood, there's a different color. You can be red with rage, pale with fright, green with envy, yellow with cowardice, So in the same way, it's the same exact entity, but when the entity or the dham is predominated by madhurya or the sweetness of intimate relationship, that's Sri Vrindavan dham. And it doesn't mean that Obharya magnanimity is not there. It's just overshadowed by sweetness in Vrindavan. And Mayapur is when the magnanimity or the compassion becomes predominant. And even we see in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu how he's Krishna, Akrishna, Krishnavarnam Tak, Krishnavarnam Tushakrishnam. He's Krishna, Krishnavarnam. He's of the category of Krishna. Varnam also means the color of Krishna. Krishnavarnam Tushakrishnam. But he's Akrishna. He's not Krishna. He's not black. He's golden. So he's the same person, but because of the mood, a different color. Just like I was just in Vrindavan, and there's Imlital. Imlital is really the in one sense, it's the manifestation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because it's Krishna who is after the rasa dance under the tree of Imlital, meditating in separation on Srimati Radharani, and in that meditation becoming her color. We even know in the story of Uddhava, Uddhava is so close in heart to Krishna that even though Uddhava is a Kshatriya and Krishna is a Vaishya, and Vana, there's different color, Uddhava assumes the exact same color as Krishna. So the color, one's color, is very much affected by his internal mood. And therefore we see even the same person, there can be physiological changes according to the mood. You get angry. Red comes to you. You become frightened. You become pale or white. You become white as a ghost. So I'm just explaining. It's the same. But this mood of magnanimity is so predominant here in Sridham Mayapur. And therefore, my experience is it's a little bit easier to live here. I have not yet begun my tour. I came early, actually, to do a little bit writing and studying, but it's actually been quite hectic for me, I have to say, frankly. I'm giving it almost like a disclaimer to this class because I'm not prepared as I usually am, and sometimes when I admit that, the honesty empowers me somehow to say something of relevance to the verses. Just been so busy meeting devotees. There's so many devotees I know here and are coming to see me, and actually I just finished speaking with Sri Prahlad. We all know Sri Prahlad from his wonderful Kirtan Association. And kind of just ran here to get to the class in time. I'll say a little bit something more about Sridham Mayapur. But my classes and curriculums, people will start coming tomorrow and the next day. So hopefully next Wednesday and next Sunday I'll really be enthused with this Gorgav. This mood of compassion and magnanimity and of course the Yuga Dharma, the holy name. I'm looking forward to it. But I have to say, being in the Dham is not just a matter of physically being there, it's a matter of consciousness. And I haven't entered yet to the extent I wanted because I've been, anyway, just, you know, talking to so many people. But to keep my consciousness, I have been doing one thing. Except for today, I've been bathing in the Ganga every day, and just the feeling the wind coming off the Ganga is so purifying. And today, also, there's been a lot of eating for me. today I was invited by Sadhguruji, one of the managers here, and an old friend of mine, Radha Charan, who was Kamal Krishnamurti's, one of his assistants. And I was the one that actually, I was in Vrindavan with Kamal Krishnamurti. He didn't have any assistant. I told him I knew Radha Charan because he worked with me in 1982. I said, I have just the man for you, Radha Charan. You know, he was around about 78, a very nice devotee, originally from Israel, worked on the kibbutz. So I took lunch with them and Chitraketu, a student of mine in the Gurukul. But I went down to the new Gurukul complex of Bhakti Vidyapuna, and they were having a morning Bhagavatam class. I have to say, I mean, the Japanese gardens and the whole setup and the atmosphere for that class, just sitting, you can see how space affects consciousness. There's a science of Vastu. And it's a science because the organization of space, the directions you face, etc., it affects consciousness. I definitely felt perfect Vastu. And it was an interesting kind of class. I forgot the Maharaj, but it was Bhakti Vidyapurna Maharaj and another Maharaj. And the format of the class was actually very interesting. And I was interested to see the format of the class. Maharaj and two Maharajas were sitting there, and the class was studying the Bhagavatam. They had good materials, but it was very much in the mood of Sadhu Sangha, that there was a lot of discussion between the Maharajas and even the devotees. And it was actually a class, and the devotees had the choice. It's very interesting, either to write an essay or to speak for 5 minutes. And there was a lot of discussion, and I like the principle of empowerment of the students. I'm very concerned, both managerially and spiritually, with the concept of empowerment. And I think this is one of Prabhupada's many expertise. And empowerment, I came up with a definition. I don't know if I'm defining it right, but this concept is to recognize another's abilities, really to understand the good in a person and what he can actually do, and then to encourage and facilitate that person. And this is what Prabhupada did. It was amazing. He didn't have very qualified people, Prabhupada. They were so young to run a spiritual movement. You know, you can imagine, even myself, I'm thinking back, my God, at the age of 32, I took sannyas. Most of my disciples are my age or older. Imagine taking sannyas and being a spiritual leader at that age. I guess I'm lucky I survived. But Prabhupada, very young people, 20 and 21, not even, when I came to the movement, if someone was 28, he was actually looked at as an elder. Ravindra Sri Prabhu once made the wise comment that the problem with ISKCON is that Prabhupada was the only adult. Any surprise that we made so many mistakes. But Prabhupada empowered people. Whatever quality they had, he actually recognized and encouraged them and gave them facility, gave them vision, gave them service. And they went out and they did very, very wonderful things. So even in terms of the class, I like the concept that the students were empowered. They're really being encouraged and told, no, you have realization that you can share with us. And actually, I heard one of the students make a presentation. These are mostly adults in this class. And they were on the 10th or 11th chapter, where Krishna leaves Hastinapur and enters Dwarka, which is very nice because, again, prema flows, the river of prema, any river flows most strongly when there's two embankments. And the embankments for the river of prema is separation and union. And therefore, the mood of seeing Krishna leave Hastinapur and enter Dwarka, you see the separation and you see the union. And even in terms of our own consciousness, we should have both. The mood, really mainly the mood of separation, but sometimes we're with Krishna, we see the deities. We're chanting the holy name, Krishna is there. But it's funny, this Brahmacharya had a section, and because most of the union and separation in Dwarka is from the ladies on the roof and what their sentiments are. So this Brahmacharya had to talk about ladies. And what he was talking about, it was very, I thought the part, if I can remember it, it was very interesting. He described, and this is a fact, that actually every living entity is prakriti. Ultimately, it's prakriti, the female conception. And Krishna is Purusha, Purusha Bhav. I'm the enjoyer. And the living entities are prakriti. They're lovers. They're meant to please Krishna. And in pleasing Krishna, they're meant to be enjoyed by him. So in the Brahmacharya, he made an interesting conception. He said what a male body is the ultimate perversion of the self. Because if the self is prakriti, when the prakriti wants to enjoy to the maximum degree, the greatest perversion of his soul, he said, is the male conception. The male body is actually the greatest perversion of the soul, because it's the form of Purusha. So anyway, it was a very interesting concept, and I enjoyed that. Now I'll get on to today's verse. I'm kind of talking casually, I guess. I just, what can I say? I'm not that well prepared, but so we're up to this section. And combined with me not being as prepared as I like, the section itself that I'm studying now doesn't lead to it didn't appear to lead to the highest philosophical presentation, because it's the story of Krishna killing, you know, the part where he's killing the demons. And of course we can have some visualization of Balaram whirling Dhenukasura around very easily, nonchalantly. Anyway, nonchalant. Very easily, without effort, and he whirls his demon around and kills him. And so, and now the demon, you know, it's going to describe excuse me, I have some cough or something. And it's going to describe a little bit more about other demons attacking. And I was kind of trying to search for some philosophical meaning, because I already explained that it's a little bit difficult when you don't see the audience and you have to speak. And I just thought, just a narration about the demons. It's not even much Krishna Leela. We had those beautiful descriptions, you know. I mean, that verse, I'm still meditating on that verse of the cowherd boys singing appropriately, and how much visualization that gives, that the cowherd boys are speaking with deep heartfelt love and appropriately, and that the commentary that they're speaking songs appropriate to the pastime. And then the further deep commentary that in Vrindavan, Krishna is so exquisite and so dynamic that every little thing he does is a festival. And he described even the blowing of his golden dhoti and the wind. He's so beautiful that even his dhoti and the contours of his body as the dhoti is blowing, or the golden cloth, it invokes such excitement that the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis of Krishna, that this is such a festival, is a celebration of a great event, Mahotsava. great enthusiasm, mahotsava. And there's great enthusiasm, mahotsava. There's great enthusiasm when there's an event, Prabhupada's disappearance, Krishna's birth, significant events, Balaram Ratha Yatra, significant events, Sharad Purnima, with the Rasa Leela. But here, such a simple thing in the spiritual world is a big event. It's Krishna. He's unlimited. It's potent. And therefore, it is so. So, coming to this section, just describing the demons, I was a little bit hesitant. I have to get something. Get me that water. But I had some thoughts. The first thing is, let me just say again, and then it came to the point where the Vrindavan forest, which is so beautiful and moving with love for Krishna to please his senses, to create the right environment, and please follow along with me in your remembrances, if that's the most wonderful thing, if you can remember Vrindavan. I don't want to go and give the descriptions every week. I've given them before. But then he's playing as an ordinary village boy, and then this significant word, Isha Cheshtita. He'll perform the Cheshtita, the endeavors of the Isha or the controllers. Now, I wanted to say a little bit more. I explained before how Aishwarya is significant for the pastime, that there must be Aishwarya, opulence. But here, and I wanted to explain something further, and this was this comment by Madhvacharya, that Aishwarya is the vessel by which a Madhurya can be placed. And what that means is Aishwarya or opulence, opulence, it invokes dasya or the mood of servitude. When you see great opulence, and this is actually the whole essence of the universal form described in the Bhagavatam as the first step in God realization. The first step in God realization is what? We have a material conception of life, and therefore we see greatness in terms of matter. So if we can see the great vibhuti or material manifestations of God, and connect them to the body of God, seeing the rivers as his veins, the mountains as his bones, the sun and the moon as his eyes, the trees as his hairs. If you can see the great material manifestations, it makes you humble. And if you can see them in relationship to God, it humbles you before God. It makes you want to serve God. But the point that's actually being made is that this Aishwarya opulence invokes Dasya Bhav, the mood of service. So Dasya Bhav, or the mood of service, is a pot or vessel for the conditioned soul. And with that pot or vessel of Dasya Bhav, the mood of servitude, then you can put in Sakya Bhav, friendship, Ras. If you have the mood of servitude, then friendship becomes relevant as a means of service to Krishna. But salyabhav, parental love, becomes relevant as a means of service to Krishna. Madhuryabhav, hanjakuras. It's funny, there was a dictionary in Bhakti Vidyakona's school where it was analyzing the words, the connection between English words and Sanskrit words. So what does conjugal come? Conjugal. It comes from yugal. Yugal means two. Prada and Krishna, yugal. So conjugal. The English word conjugal ultimately comes from yugal. Prada and Krishna. It ultimately comes from the Ayras. Prada and Krishna together, which is the Shakti and Shakti Mab, the ultimate principle of creation. And no wonder how that ultimate principle of the cosmic manifestation, Kanjiko, is also the ultimate principle reflected in this world. That for people who want material enjoyment, they want conjugal love. So this vessel of Dasya. Because why? Because Aishwarya, from Aishwarya grows respect. And because we are so conditioned to enjoy and be the controllers and the enjoyers, that we won't enter into any relationship with Krishna unless we have respect. And in the conditioned state, that respect will come from Aishwarya or opulence. So even in Krishna Lila, we always see that there, within the pastimes, there's some philosophy, there's some opulence. And Sukadeva Goswami, you know, he has a method of writing the Bhagavatam that he doesn't just want it to be stories. Because, it's one thing to appreciate rasa on some reasonable level of maturity, but the danger is it becoming entertainment. The danger is of it becoming just aesthetic. It's great poetry, it's great stories, but it shouldn't just become aesthetics or entertainment. And therefore, even within all the pastimes, you'll always see either a sense of Aishwarya or some description by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prika himself. The Bhagavatam is so scientifically constructed to elevate our consciousness. And therefore, right from the beginning, it presents the sweetness of Krishna. And then if the sweetness of Krishna is not there, it's just Aishwarya, it'll become dry. And if there's not philosophy, it'll just become sentimental. So just as there's union and separation as two embankments, for the philosophical mind to understand the actual position of Krishna, one needs both the sense of philosophy so won't be sentimental, and the sense of relationship or love, rasa, so it won't become dry. So, now let's get to that pastime. The pastime begins with the cowherd boys, and the cowherd boys are the exemplars of bhakti. And what's the exemplar of bhakti? They're constantly concerned about Krishna. And because Krishna is so absorbed in the pleasure of the devotees and the lila or play of Vrindavan, they're concerned that he was not eating. And therefore, on the pretext of their own hunger, they ask Krishna to kill this demon. Before I go to the pastime, I should say one other point. Therefore, in hearing even about these stories of the demons, which in one sense is entertaining and exciting, and perhaps it's a little bit more exciting when you're younger than older, and for children certainly, perhaps, although some parents say, well, it's violence, I don't know if my children should hear it, but that's another point. But it must be contemplated. So that's what I've been doing for the last hour. Actually, someone left and I just had an hour to prepare. I'm saying, okay, now let me contemplate this story and go deep. And there's a comment, both Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Vallabhacharya said the stories and pastimes of the demon should be chronologically analyzed. And many, many commentaries are there that what the Bhagavatam is, especially the 10th canto, is preparing the consciousness for the Rasleela. And if you look at the Rasleela, I believe by the time you get to the Rasleela, all the demons in Krishna's pastimes have been killed. And the demons represent subtle anarthas. I didn't look this up, otherwise I would have looked it up, because I forgot. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that the demons represent subtle anarthas. And if you actually study these stories, you'll see they exemplify different aspects of material consciousness. Now, significantly, and this is why I'm trying to get a little bit deeper here, so it's subtle, just like the wives of the Brahmins, that story we've been studying on Wednesday, which is very, very close to entering the Ras Lila. And I was discussing, those of you that weren't here on Wednesday, because some come on Sunday, some come on Wednesday, I was discussing the point why the gopis came to Krishna, and they were able to stay, and the wives of the Brahmins, who were so extraordinarily qualified, I mean, they gave up all material hopes, their desires, and hopes to see Krishna, defeated the hopes of even their children. Their children, you can imagine, the mothers out there, leaving your children, the children were in front, saying, "Mommy, Mommy, don't go." And they were so, by hearing about Krishna, their hopes to see Krishna had matured and intensified to such a degree that even their husbands and children can't stop them. But why couldn't they go to see and stay with Krishna? Because there was some minor, tiny tinge of a conception that they were the wives of Brahmins. That they had some conception, slightly even, other than their sarup, their eternal position, relationship to Krishna, that we'll hear about. And that's what does liberation mean? Muktir hidva yata rupam sarupena bivastita. Muktir hidva, you give up yata rupam. Anything that is false, anything that is utari, anything that is a material designation, anything that's external to the soul. Sarupena bivastita, and you accept your sarup, the thing that is really you, which is a servant of Krishna. And until you actually come to the point of full realization of your sarup, which means you get rid of anything that's anartha, that has no value to your dharma or your nature as an eternal servant of Krishna, you cannot enter Krishna's pastimes. We even see the gopis that are coming, the gopis that are the sadhana siddha gopis that have come from this material world. Initially, when Krishna blows the flute, some of them cannot come to Krishna because they still have some children or some identification. And until that is burnt up by the separation from Krishna, or until they get the association of the Nitya Siddha gopis. Association is so important. It's called the logic of touchstone. If someone is in proximity of a transforming agent, then you can assume that he's transformed at that level. That's also going to be in the Wives of the Brahmins story, because one of the wives of the Brahmins, she was held back. She didn't go. And when Krishna came back, when the wives of the Brahmins came back from seeing Krishna and told her the vision of Krishna that they had, out of separation, she left her body. And it was understood she entered into Krishna's eternal, into her sarup. And therefore it was described by the philosophy of touchstone, then the wives of the Brahmins must also have achieved perfection. And then there were verses by the commentators in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, which mentioned that the wives of the Brahmins were Kripa Siddha. They actually achieved perfection. So we're speaking about, I'll try to get back on track here, we're speaking about the cowherd boys. And their desire. They're only concerned about Krishna's pleasure. And therefore, they see everything in relationship to service to Krishna. That's a pure devotee. It's very intense to be in the presence of a pure devotee. I remember going into Srila Prabhupada's rooms in Vrindavan, and it was very intense. Why? It's like entering the spiritual world. Why? Because Prabhupada was such a devotee that had such intense desire to serve Krishna that everything in his presence was intensely for the service of Krishna. And therefore, when you entered in his presence, you had to be in the mood of consciousness of intensely wanting to serve Krishna. Otherwise, it was hard to stay in his presence. And that's why so many of his servants left. It's very hard to be in that presence. Just as it's difficult for us to be in the spiritual world. If we enter the spiritual world, everything is intensely for the service of Krishna. And right now, we can look at our environment, how many things we see in our environment that are intensely for our pleasure. So you can see that consciousness of the spirit, very, very difficult to enter into the spiritual world. And therefore, unless you have that consciousness, you can't enter into the spiritual world. And I was explaining, therefore, the process of liberation is getting rid of everything. And again, I'm not preaching renunciation. In our level of Krishna consciousness, yukta vairagya, we give up the things that we can't use. Yukta vairagya, we renounce the things we can't use in Krishna's service. And therefore, we keep things to keep us, the mind and body, fit for the service of Krishna. But ultimate liberation means anything that's external to the self you give up. And I always remember the story of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the Kshatriyas of the days of yore, when they saw that they read the circumstances of their life, either by gray hairs or old age or disease or whatever it is, when you read. I look at destiny as the voice of God. So when you read the circumstances around you and they're loudly telling you, you don't have much more time left in this world. And in Yudhisthira's example, he saw his Dhritarashtra left home and he took that as a signal. He saw that, yes, it's time now to prepare fully and intensely for the ultimate liberation. And what did he do? He walked to the north. And the Kshatriyas, when they walked to the north, they were such mystic yogis. But what did they do? First, they ripped off their medals, their uniforms, because being a Kshatriya is external to the nature of the self. And then by performing austerities, there would be difficulties in the body, and they would get, they kept on walking to the north. It was getting colder and colder, and they ripped off their uniforms, and there's austerities of the body, and therefore they understood that the body was external to the self. They gave that up. And ultimately, the last thing that they had to give up, this is all described in mystic yogic process also, the last thing is the ahankara. The ahankara, the false conception of the self. I wrote something in that regard, if I can find it. Yes, it says, the only enemy of Krishna, it's from Narada Bhakti Sutta, the one real enemy of Krishna is the ahankara. The real one thing that Krishna doesn't want to touch, doesn't want to be with. And that ahankara creates the material world. Prabhupada described that the material world begins from the collective ahankara of false ego, the living entity. So the last thing is a subtle conception of the material. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So spiritual consciousness, look at these cowherd boys, and what is Vrindavan? When they smell the sweet taste, wind, 8 kilometers away of the tal fruit, they immediately think, it smells so nice, let me offer it to Krishna. Just we can actually check our consciousness. When we're smelling things and seeing things beautifully, we're seeing beautiful things, smelling things nicely, are we thinking intensely, let us give this to Krishna? If there's so many tastes, we walk in, we pass some ice cream shop, some fruit stand, are we thinking, oh, how nice, how beautiful, let me offer it to Krishna? This is why the purpose of deity worship is to get into that consciousness that Krishna is the center. And I'm just thinking how nicely Prabhupada taught the basic foundational conceptions of Krishna consciousness. I remember that when I visited the Brooklyn Temple for one of the first times when it was on Henry Street, and one devotee instructed me. He said, I said, do you have any service? He said, yes, you can clean the floor. And he gave me a rag, and he said, Prabhupada said that cleaning the floor is like cleaning your heart. So immediately he took the activity of cleaning the floor, and by Prabhupada's presence and preaching, it wasn't a fruitive activity. Let me finish cleaning the floor. Let me finish this activity. But the activity itself is love. It's cleaning my heart so I can be a better servant of Krishna. So the consciousness in Braj, all the smells, the sights, the sounds, it's offered to Krishna in love, and when you hear it, you want to offer that to Krishna in love. It's the beautiful environment of pure love. So we see here, and now in analyzing, as Varsana Maharaj always used to like to describe, the science of demonology. The science of demons. So, interesting thing here is Dainakasura is one of the demons that Balaram destroys. And Balaram is Sri Guru. So there's certain demons that Sri Guru destroys, and they're the demons of gross ignorance. And also, we see in Krishna's pastime that generally Krishna is enjoying, but even if Balaram doesn't kill the demons, Balaram is the one, as Sri Guru, the Adi Guru, Guru Tattva, Balaram is always the one that identifies the demons, if you study the pastime. He can act, and Krishna may kill him. And also, specifically, look at the demons that Balaram kills. At least in Palambasura and Dainakasura, they're a little bit more subtle. They're a little bit more subtle. Agastya was a huge python. Kali was a big snake. Dainakasura was an ass. Just a donkey. And okay. He was just a donkey, so it's kind of like a hidden demon. But he was really, really disturbing. And the Coward Boys, the commentaries would mention that he's one of the demons. There's just a few demons. They used to come from Mathura, but this was a demon that lived in Braj. And he had captured one forest of Braj, Talava. And he would go out from the forest, and he would... Anyway, the descriptions were there. Even though he was an ass demon, he actually... That was just his external form. He was actually cursed. And I found out today, and speaking to one sadhu, I usually in different places have different scholars that I sometimes consult, and he's actually a descendant of Prahlad Maharaj. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj is in the family of demons, but still, he was cursed to take the body of a donkey because he had the nature of kicking things. So, and also, we discussed before, there was a word, avarudhani, I'm trying to find that word here, it may take me, yes, he kept everything under control. And it described that the fruits, patitani, they had already fallen. They're falling, and they've already fallen. And what is the nature of a donkey? He only eats grass. He doesn't even like fruits. So this is the gross material enjoyment that he can't enjoy, but he doesn't want others to enjoy. And therefore, he's keeping them under control, even if he can't eat them. And not only is he keeping them under control, but he's trampling them so others can't enjoy them. So this is the gross material consciousness. It's really just envy. You want to be the enjoyer, and you don't want anybody else to enjoy. And what is spiritual life? Spiritual life is the pleasure of others. The advancement of others becomes your pleasure. That's spiritual life. The pleasure, you recognize the glories of Krishna, and you're happy. You love him. You're happy that he's the enjoyer. And when other devotees and other people advance, you become happy. But here's the demoniac consciousness, the gross, ass-like demoniac consciousness that he can't enjoy, and he doesn't want others to enjoy. It's interesting. And so, therefore, when you hear these things, you know, the way it is that we have anarthas in our hearts. And if they're pointed out by Shastra, and they're condemned in Shastra, then the sincere person who's not just reading the stories for contemplation or for entertainment, and he's not just reading the stories superficially, he's not just hearing and chanting as a ritual, he's actually trying to go deep, then when he hears this, it actually hits him and he looks in his heart. Is this consciousness in me? Is this consciousness in me that I want to be the enjoyer and controller, and I'm not happy when others succeed? And is that anartha a symptom of my envy for God? And do I want Sri Guru to root this out of my heart? So this pastime is exemplifying that. And when one is contemplating it deeply, then they're seeing Balaram destroying. And not only destroying, now you cannot understand, Balaram also is the minister of agriculture, because he has the plow. And it represents the land of Vrindavan and the ground of Vrindavan. What is the plow? It makes the land fertile. If there's rocks, you know, then things can't grow. So the plow crushes the dirt. It makes it more fertile so that the fruits of bhakti can be... So here, the heart, but also Balaram, the land of Vrindavan, it should grow. It should grow with what? It should grow with offerings to Krishna. So our hearts should grow in love, in sentiment, in the attitudes of offering to Krishna. And that happens by the association of the Vaishnavas. Now this, we'll go to this verse today. Very interesting here. Just to show you a little, oops, excuse me. I got a clock here that lets me know what time it is, and it just went out. Okay.
All right, baby.
Okay. What time?
9:35.
It's what time?
It's either 9:35 or 10:35 there. Here it's over.
Wait, no, I think everyone's wrong. Let me get it. I'll be right here for a second. It'll take me a second. But this verse, I really want... it's 12:06 p.m. there. Right, thank you. So we'll just... Okay. It means generally I speak for another, I've been pretty good about this. I speak for another about 7 or 8, 9 minutes. So this verse, Lord Balaram threw the dead body of Dainakasura into the tallest palm tree in the forest. And when the dead demon landed in the treetop, the tree began shaking. The great palm tree, causing a tree by its side also to shake, broke under the weight of the demon. The neighboring tree caused yet another tree to shake, and this one struck yet another tree, which also began shaking. In this way, many trees in the forest shook and broke. So here's the question that comes up, and it's very subtle, I think. The trees are, you know, we worship the trees in Vrindavan. So here's Balaram taking this donkey and throwing it into the trees, and then it's causing this domino effect. One tree is hitting another tree, hitting another tree, hitting another tree. So actually, I became curious of this, and I consulted one person that he should look in the commentaries. Why are they killing the trees? And very interesting, it said because Balaram he wants to keep the forest of the land of Vrindavan pure for the service of Krishna. So he said, again, this touchstone philosophy, but not touchstone, but Jayatobhishyam Pumsa, Sango Jayatobhishyam Pumsa, Sango Sanjayate, Sangat Sanjayate Kama, that by association things become impure also. So the trees here, because the demons were in this forest and they were using the trees, and they were so evil-minded, Bharatmana, they were so evil-minded that the trees, by association, he actually cleaned out even all the trees in this forest. And because he wanted to make clear ground for the purity of the offering to Krishna. Remove everything that's sinful and everything that's associated with sin. And it's a fact, you know, that objects, what is the nature of the material world? What are the modes of nature? What the modes of nature are in our heart is their conceptions to enjoy based on the hunkar. And there's three basic conceptions to enjoy. There's lethargy and, you know, ignorance. We enjoy that way. Let me just sleep and do nothing. Isn't that fun? Then there's passion, which is let me have fruit of activity, accomplish things, ambition, sex life, etc. And then goodness, which is also a spirit of enjoyment. Let me enjoy understanding, enlightenment, peacefulness. So according to the desire, the modes are everywhere. So according to the desire to enjoy inside, similarly, everything externally is the modes of nature because this world is meant to facilitate our desire to enjoy. So every shape, sound, form, taste, etc. is in one of the modes. And what does that mean? It means that it can invoke and satisfy a particular spirit of material enjoyment. For a man, the form of woman, the man, the shape is, you know, a particular shape that inspires a particular passion. Or that's why if you don't want to sleep much, you want to avoid depression to a certain extent. If you keep things very, very clean, it nourishes the goodness in you. If you keep it very dirty, it nourishes the ignorance in you. You'll sleep more in a dirty place than you will in a clean place. And same thing with foods, etc. They're in different modes. Music is in different modes. I always give that example of in New York City. They wanted to clean up the Port Authority, the bus station. They could not get rid of the bums. They drag them out, they come back in. They drag them out, they come back in. And then finally, one person, maybe he read the Bhagavad Gita, the 14th chapter, the modes of material nature, he decided to put on classical music. which is in the mode of, let's say it was music in the mode of goodness. And because the nature of those people, the bums, they're internally in ignorance, and they want to associate with ignorance, they did not like the sounds of goodness. So the point I'm making is, it's a kind of a side point, but the trees, they were used in a particular way. And therefore, perhaps they also became contaminated. Anyway, they're living entities also. Even we realize it in the story of Sukadeva Goswami when he left home. When Sukadeva Goswami left home, and his father, Vyasadeva, called him, "My son, my son, my son." And there was an echo in the forest, "My son, my son, my son." And the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, what was the echo? The echo was the separation of the trees. Because the Mahabhagavat, such as Sukadeva Goswami, he's so powerful that things in his their proximity become affected and by devotion and become attached. Even that, the influence is there. So these trees, somehow they had another influence. Let me do one more verse today, and then Valasya Lilayot Shishta Kara Deha Hata Hata Valaschakam Pare Sarve Mahava Tirita Iva. Because of Lord Balaram's pastime of throwing the body of the ass demon into the top of the tallest palm tree, all the trees began shaking and striking against one another as if blown about by powerful winds. So this is Balaram's power. Naitach chitram bhagavati yanante jagad ishvare ota protam idam yashmin tantushvanga yatapata. My dear Parikshit, that Lord Balaram killed Dainakasura is not such a wonderful thing, considering that he is the unlimited personality of Godhead, the controller of the entire universe, indeed the entire cosmos rests upon him, just as woven cloth rests upon its own horizontal and vertical thread. So Balaram is so powerful, he's maintaining the whole universe. But again, this is a classic example of the methodology of Sukadeva Goswami. Demons were throwing around, trees were shaking. He wants to now bring in some Aishwarya, some philosophical conception. He wants to bring in some philosophical conception just to invoke some contemplation. So you don't just stay at the level of entertainment before you're fully qualified to relish rasa. Before you fully have developed your dasya bhav, your mood of servitude, and therefore the sweetness of Madhurya, the sweetness of sakya ras, the sweet of can actually rest in the heart. So my dear Anga, my dear Parikshit, my dear, out of love, I'm telling you this, tata krishnam charamansha yatayo dinakasya Proshtaro Bhyadirvan Sarve Samrabha Hatabandava. The other ass demons, close friends of Dainakasura, were enraged upon seeing his death, unless they immediately ran to attack Krishna and Balaram. Krishnam cha Ramancha. It's stated here, Sanatana, that they first attacked Krishna and then Balaram, and therefore the contemplation. One reason is that the demons, having saw the power, the prowess of Balaram, since he went first, they'll attack Krishna first, or it may be out of affection for his elder brother, that Lord Krishna, seeing his brother attack, then placed himself in front, out of affection for his younger brother. Krishna, Akila Rasa Mita Murti. Okay, so we'll end for today.